Ya lo hace. Pierna derecha, directo al arco. ¡Golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Monday, May 20th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins, as always. So, Dwayne, I hope you had a good weekend, and I hope you didn't spend too much time taking care of dragons on a Sunday evening.
Yeah, I just sent a photo out a minute ago. We'll show you how I spent my my weekend in really one isolated moment. I was sitting there in my Pablo Zabaleta City top with the Raptors game on the laptop behind a large screen of the Game of Thrones series finale.
Oh, well, for once, the Raptors didn't let you down when you were watching it, so at least there's that.
Oh, my God, though. Yeah, I mean, they should have ended in regulation, passed, well, score the damn free throws. But nonetheless, it was a pretty good weekend. It is a holiday here in Ontario, where I am in Toronto. Queen Victoria Day, which it makes no sense. The British don't even celebrate Victoria, but I think Canada just wanted a holiday in May.
Well, so, yeah, we
birthday, Queen Victoria.
And we need an official weekend to start our cottage life, right? So May 24, even though it's May 20th, it was a May 24 weekend. Next weekend will be my May 24, but that's for a totally different subject. But on Saturday, Chris Wondolowski, Dwayne, became the king of goals in the history of Major League Soccer. With a four-goal performance, Wando has now scored 148 goals. He has tied and then surpassed Landon Donovan as the all-time goal-scoring leader of Major League Soccer.
Yeah, I just saw a poll on Twitter who should be the MLS player of the week. I don't think they need to vote this week. Look, good for him. And this is an accomplishment. I get frustrated with the yeah buts out there. You know, is Chris Wondolowski the greatest striker that's ever played in Major League Soccer? No. Is he the greatest American striker? No. Is he the greatest San Jose Earthquake striker?
No.
Probably.
Well, yeah.
But, maybe. No, but you could probably debate that a little bit. But, well, if you include the NHL era, which we know my theory on that. But nonetheless, what he is, though, is a very, very good MLS player that has been very, very good for a long time. And Chris Wondolowski is actually the walking epitome of why MLS exists and what it can best hope to accomplish. And I've talked a lot about this year, this concept about creating a professional infrastructure, a professional environment, which allows your overall system to thrive in. And Chris Wondolowski is the example of that. This is what, I don't want to make this not about him, but this is what the Canadian Premier League hopes to accomplish here in 10 or 15 years. So, but in his case, this is an example of what it does. MLS has produced a lot of these guys. I always use Chad Barrett as my example of the, what you're trying to do, create a bunch of those guys, and you're going to be just fine because they're going to push everyone else, right? Chris Wondolowski, in many ways, is that. Now, he has played on a World Cup roster, famously missed a very open shot in the World Cup. And America, a lot of American fans were reacting about how, you missed the shot. Well, that's a false equivalency.
I forgot
about that.
That
has nothing to do with him in MLS.
2014, how long ago that was. When you're right. And I've been covering Major League Soccer really, intensely since 2012. So I caught the end of the prolific couple years for Chris Wondolowski. In 2013, Chris Wondolowski scored 47 goals and tied Roy Lassiter's record, and had that record up until last year, up until Jose Martinez decided to break the record. So, but Chris Wondolowski was a type of striker. He is still a type of striker that's streaky, right? He gets into a rhythm, he gets into a groove, and he can put 2-3 goals. We've seen 4 goals in the weekend, but he gets into a rhythm. And unfortunately, he's not getting a lot of playing time last year and this year, so that's why it took him a little longer to get there. But we have to say, it's not pure talent that brought Chris Wondolowski to that dance and made him stay on the dance floor for over 15 years. What has made Chris Wondolowski a great player is his attitude, his work ethic. He's always in good shape. He's always in good spirit. He's an amazing person, and haven't had the chance to talk to people behind the scenes who did rub shoulder with him in locker rooms. He is a gem. He's nice, caring, kind, great father, great friend, apparently. So, yeah, it couldn't happen to a better guy. And it is because of the ethic of his practicing, of his playing. The longevity of his career made sure that he would get the record. But he barely scored more than 8 goals a year for like his first almost 10 years. Maybe 7 years as a striker before he first had his double-digit goal-scoring season. So he did develop late, Dwayne, but he never quit. He always worked at it, and eventually it does pay off.
Yeah, he was, through the math here, 27 when he came to the San Jose Earthquakes. He had played previously for the Earthquakes to start his career after a shot with a club called Chico Ra Rooks. I don't know who they are exactly. I scored there. I suspect that's a lower level, though. Went with the Earthquakes, scored 2 goals, or had 2 appearances, no goals. Went to the Dynamo, 37 goals in, 4 goals in 37 appearances. And then at 27, he came over, I believe, as in a supplementary draft or something like that. I'd have to remember off the top of my head, but he basically was acquired for next to nothing by the Earthquakes. And then he became a club legend, which shows, you know, it is for many people, Major League Soccer, he is the ultimate example of that quote-unquote late bloomer. And as I said, he is the reason why leagues like MLS are so important. 299 appearances for the Earthquakes, 144 goals for them right now. This is a remarkable career for a remarkable player. And, you know, first ballot Hall of Famer. If there is a MLS Hall of Fame, there is not. He probably still will make the U.S. Hall of Fame, though, because of his accomplishments in Major League Soccer, as he should.
Yeah, no, exactly. So with those 4 goals this weekend, now 148 goals for Chris Monolowski in Major League Soccer. The big brunt of them, so 111 of them were scored for the Earthquakes, and 37 were scored for the Zombie Earthquakes, the Houston Dynamo. But for Chris Monolowski, Dwayne, I think it's a good example, too, of what a successful player career is. It's not necessarily always about representing the country at the World Cup and winning a World Cup or winning 10 trophies a year with City, or sometimes being a professional. And from a little kid from California having a long career, since 2004 he's been playing professional soccer. It's 2019, over 15-year career. And in that 15 years, Dwayne, I think you can probably count on one finger, or not even, the amount of people he rubbed the wrong way. And I think it is important. Often we talk in life, people that are successful, they walk all over people. You watch like shows like Survivors, and the meanest, most cunning person kicks everyone out and backstabs people and win. You have that CEO who makes his way all to the top by literally taking advantage of everything he can and everyone he can. Professional players have been that way too. We heard about the Zlatan and how Zlatan has not treated his teammates the best over the years, or other players that barely talk to his teammates. There's a bunch of videos of Chris Wondolowski just dancing in the locker room, just being someone, just being a person, just being human, and he happens to be a soccer player. And we often forget about the person behind the athlete. And in this case, I had the chance to talk to him once, and nothing but class, nothing but good words I have to say about Chris Wondolowski. And I was really happy when he scored the 4 goals on Saturday.
All right, I'll tell you a quick Chris Wondolowski antidote from the 2010 MLS Cup final. He was not playing in that game, but he was in Toronto. That game was in Toronto, Dallas, and Colorado, for those who don't remember. He was in town as part of the MLS Works charity game. So a lot of their good charity providers were flown into the city to watch the game and were provided an opportunity to play a game against MLS stars. And Chris Wondolowski, who had just kind of started to break out, was involved in that. By happenstance, Kevin, I was involved with a tournament myself at the same time, which was taking place in the same bubble at Lamport Stadium. But the problem will fact play now, so if you don't know. Anyway, so this was under the bubble, and we were playing our tournament against other supporters groups around the league in Toronto. They were mostly Toronto, but there were a few out-of-town teams. And in the semifinal, there was a shootout involving, I won't betray who they were, but there was a couple groups, Toronto groups, that were playing each other, and it got to a penalty shootout, and one of their members ran across waving a Brazilian flag for some mysterious reason as a guy went up to try and take the penalty shot. They ultimately were distracted by that and missed it. That created all hell breaking loose. A full-on fight breaks out at a charity tournament. I know.
Sometimes at Lamport Stadium.
Hashtag ultras. Anyway, so all hell is breaking loose, and this guy, one guy gets pushed towards the divider between where we're playing and where the MLS Works game is playing. And the MLS Works players are all turned with their mouths wide open watching this play out because they're, what the hell is happening?
Where's the popcorn? Where's the popcorn in my seat? I'm looking at this. It's a movie.
So they're all like, some of them have cameras. Some of them are just sitting there watching. It was the early days for cameras. But there was one player that reached out and grabbed him and helped break up a fight. I look up and go, oh, my God, that's Chris Wondolowski. So he broke up a fight at TFC Supporters Soccer Tournament in 2010. So there you go. Yeah. That maybe says something about his character right there.
Yeah, one of the things I like about Chris Wondolowski is he's himself, and he's not trying like to either play up is like his role or his importance, or he's himself and he's on social media and he talks to people and he's got a lot of followers and he's there. We were live on Twitter here. I should have tagged him because maybe he would have listened. Because one time we're talking about the Quakes, I think it was last year. It was after the weird Michael Sturry incident in Montreal where he subbed in Fatai Alashe, and then he subbed in Alashe for somebody else, and he blamed it on injuries. Anyway, it was a weird, weird situation. And Chris Wondolowski was here, and he was like very, very reserved last year when that happened. He was just looking at it, not complaining, not doing anything, and not throwing his coach under the bus either. And he was just being really nice. And we were like hammering that nail of, what is the coach doing? Does he know? And then I look at like the live viewers, and like, well, I guess Chris Wondolowski was listening. So that was always interesting. And I was like, okay, well, I hope I didn't say anything bad about him because he doesn't deserve anything bad. He is one of my all-time favorite MLS player.
Fair enough. Similar note, Jay Chapman agrees with my take on the Game of Thrones final last night, if you care. So there you go. He liked the tweet, is what I'm saying. Anyway.
Yeah, that's
true. If we're not name-dropping, though, we can move on.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of name-dropping, let's look at the scores in Major League Soccer and the Canadian Premier League this weekend. Let's start with Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, the Battle of the Syrup, the Maple Syrup Battle, Montreal Impact versus the New England Revolution, 0-0. Here's 2 hours of my life that I won't see again.
Yeah, the Ottawa Fury are angry at your characterization of that, the maple syrup derby there. They want that Eastern Ontario syrup industry represented. But, 2 hours of your life that you'll never get back is also how I would describe Toronto's game of the weekend. But you go, Kevin. You continue.
Yeah. So, okay, 0-0, the Montreal Impact, New England. Montreal was having trouble breaking through the last third, of course, and it was, even though Piatti did play 25 minutes, it was his first play in 2 months, and you can tell that we need, like I'm involved, like the Impact needs Piatti to be back fully in 90 minutes will probably be the case in a week or two, but they need offensive creativity. They're lacking that right now in their squad. There's a lot of fatigue. I think now we're seeing the toll that the 3 weeks of three games being played in a week, that happens 3 times for the Impacts at the beginning of the season, it takes a toll. And I think we're seeing that fatigue set in for the Impact with players like Tider and other players like Urruti, who runs about 20 miles a game. And I'm barely exaggerating here. So it does show me that the Impact need not time off, but they need a few reinforcement, Piatti playing, and they need to do a bit of a squad rotation to make sure Tider is back to normal. He hasn't been like himself, and a couple of other players. But the one silver lining from Saturday, Dwayne, is that no one won in the Eastern Conference. Everybody lost. And Montreal, with a draw, stays in third, but now they're alone in third position in the East. So I guess it was a good result after all.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, Yes, absolutely. MLS is a funny little league, and the East is a funny little conference this year. You know, for about 2.5 years, I think the East has clearly been superior in every way. The top teams were there because New York especially dropped down, and Atlanta, although they are coming back now, weren't as strong as they were last year up to stop. The East is clearly behind the West right now. So it is a bit of a muddy thing. It's like no one wants it. Who's going to grab the brass ring that's hanging there come July? You do need to get some points. You need to stay in touch. But if you lose a game and everyone else loses around you, or you lose points and everyone else loses around you, then you say, okay, well, we got by on that one. But you still have to address what maybe is the concern there. And when it comes to Montreal, I think that when they do struggle, I think it's pretty clear that they are struggling to find goals. If one goal scores, it gets scored against them. They have to be nearly perfect defensively to win games. And that's a very difficult thing to sustain in Major League Soccer, which is why I always say offense wins championships in this league, because if you are relying entirely on being stingy, although it is not impossible, it is rare that you can play that over a course of a year because of just the way the league is structured. So I think any team that believes they have a chance to go deep this year has to be both concerned and happy right now in the East, and Montreal is no exception. They have time to address what shortcomings they feel they have. And since no one is pulling away, no reason someone can't in that second half. And there's no reason that if someone can't, that anyone can, that Montreal can't be that anyone, right?
And now when you look at it, Montreal has still a very low amount of games played at home versus on the road. And they had the third best record in the Eastern Conference. So right now they're doing what they need to be in the conversation at the end of the season, to be top four, to get a home playoff rendezvous and maybe get a chance to move on. And I think we're going to see this year if it actually does change with the one game only at home or on the road, but only the one game playoff round. We'll see if it does change the tactics and if people that are at home actually get an advantage. Because over the last couple of years, 60% of the road guys won MLS playoff series. But let's continue. Dwayne, Real Salt Lake 3, Toronto FC 0, an off night and the Riot for TFC.
Travel's hard in this league. Travel at altitude is even harder. That's really what it comes down to. Obviously, TFC fans TFC fans want me to burn them at the stake every week. That's what they want, and they get frustrated when I don't. But I look at the overall metrics through American Soccer Analytics website last week. And TFC is still trending in the top third of the league in every major category. So I tend to look at that stuff and believe that everything eventually finds its mean, right? So, yes, right now they are not doing very well. Right now they are struggling to create. Right now I think that there's probably what we're seeing is Pozuelo starting to hit that wall from having played an entire year. And we always said that when he came in, that this was going to be a challenge. And look, where did I pick them in the preseason? Fifth or something? I was amongst the highest people out there. I'm not going to back off that. I still think they're a playoff team. I still think that pretty much there's nothing to indicate they aren't a playoff team. Are they a championship team? Well, let's see what they add in the summer. But right now, no. That's where we always put them. I still think they're fine, though. And trying to panic, well, you can't panic now, thank God. But panicking 2 weeks ago and just buying someone for the sake of buying someone would have been absolutely, that would have been Mo Johnson TFC crap. So, no. Okay, it wasn't ideal. I get it. But try and take a step back, folks. Take a step off the ledge. Think about what happened. They went in through all of their planning, all of their season preparation was based around the fact that they would have Giovinco, they would have Vasquez, and that they would need to replace both probably by next year. That would have included the summer window. That would have included next year's winter window. But they would have probably been viewing that their improvement, that their focus for this past winter would have been on improving the wing play. All of a sudden, Vasquez walks to the door and says, look, they've offered me a whole lot of money to play in the Middle East. Can you please let me go? I have to take care of my family. And they correctly said, we can't screw you over. And you only had a year left here anyway. So, yes, we will let you go. And they had to do that. They had to do that for the long-term benefit of their relationship with players. Because if you held him hostage and made him play for less money here and not then probably get the same amount of contract a year later in the Middle East, then what player in their right mind is going to come over again if you're going to hold them hostage like that, right? It's the right move to let him go.
Especially when that player has a certain amount of of name recognition across the world of football and did play at places that are very well known. So it will affect future. It could potentially affect future transfers because it's not like a guy no one ever heard of and it happens and he's going to talk to you. No, but when it's a name like Víctor Vázquez who plays in Barcelona and the Academy and other places in the world and does have a relationship with a lot of players and potential players that could come to MLS, and if you screw him over, then his discussion with other players would be like, yeah, I enjoyed my time, but you know, I had the chance to leave and they didn't do it and they screwed me over for money, so you shouldn't go. Now at least he's like, go, and if you have a better option, they're going to let you go, so just go. So, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and look, so suddenly now they have to replace him. They weren't planning on it, and they're 2 months into their offseason at this point, right? So they have to pivot. They're pivoting, and then all of a sudden the next monkey wrench comes in. Giovinco starts to make noise that he wants a new contract. PFC is likely operating, likely planning, maybe even have had like a verbal sort of, yeah, sure, we'll play the year out. There might have been a miscommunication there. There could have been maybe a problem in the fact that Vezpachenko might not have been completely mentally all in Toronto for the last fall. That's
true.
Reasonable, since he knew that he was going to Columbus probably. That maybe that line of communication had broken down a little bit, and then suddenly he's making this noise, and they got Josie also out there being Josie. So you've got a whole bunch of stuff going on the highest end of your roster that you have to deal with. They make the offer. They try and keep Giovinco. It becomes clear as day that he is not going to accept anything, which means, folks, they could have forced him to stay and play his contract, yes, but he would have been eligible for a pre-contract in a month. And you know damn well he signs it. And do you think there's not going to be any distractions then? Good God. Of course there would have been. It would have been a mess.
You think he's not going to complain and be like, how about you let me go now? Be like, there's a golden bridge waiting for me. Let me go.
Yeah, so that mess happens. And they are well behind now for two things that happened that were not completely in their control. And then they had to pivot again and try and scramble. And I think, and you're going to think that I'm being too defending of the club here. Many people are. But I think they did a good job in getting Pozuelo over the line. That was difficult. And that did do without him, they're not a playoff team. They needed that to keep them base level. And then by that point, they had to put all their energy into that. By that point, then what are you going to do? The transfer windows around the world aren't open. Like, you can try and negotiate. You can try and work something out with clubs, but you need them to really be on board with it. And we saw it with the Gomez and Atlas refusing ultimately at the end to break the
Omar Gonzalez.
Yeah. Yeah. It's complicated, folks. It is not it's not Football Manager. Like, it's not that they weren't trying to get it done.
Are you saying that you can't press a button to be like, force the transfer or force the trade? That's what I used to do.
Yeah.
Like give me Wayne Gretzky for $10,000. Force the trade. That's NHL 94 for you.
It's exactly. It's obviously, and everyone understands, it's more complicated than forcing the trade, but it's even more complicated than a Football Manager where you do have to negotiate with a bot, right? You might get turned down there. You can't just say, I can't take a lower league club and bring Ronaldo over, but I could edit the game and do that, but that
you can try.
Stupid.
Yeah, you can try to get a bigger salary cap or something, but no, I agree. And we'll just continue. We'll just move on from DFC from there, but of course. But that's what happened when you have a history that had more years with difficulties and trouble than success. That when you had success and you go back to difficulties, even if it's just for a game or two, the reflex is there, right? The instinct is there. Like, well, I'm not liking what I'm seeing. I'm worried.
Yeah, no, for sure. And this is not a TFC fan comment. This is an MLS fan comment, depending on whatever team you do. Generally speaking, most MLS fans, and obviously you listen to our podcast, particularly if you're not in the Canadian market, you're probably not one of these fans, but most MLS fans that are in the stadiums week in, week out, even the dedicated ones, waving flags, really only follow one team. So they do not put moves and struggles into context with the rest of the league. They just say, see what's happening that's wrong with their club and go, this is awful. We're in trouble. We can't ever fix this. They don't notice that there are 12 other teams in the league with the same problem, right?
Or that there's like five other teams in the league that are really good and will beat you on any given match, you know?
Yeah, and look, do I ultimately think TFC is a championship team this year? No, and I don't think at any point I've ever said that. Do I think that they have the resources that if everything rolls perfectly for them in the summer, they could be a championship team? Yeah, and that's where people will disagree and yell at me. But you tell me how I'm wrong. There's still a lot of talent in that roster. They're going to have to tweak it a bit in the offseason, I think, again. But if they add two good pieces, then there's no reason they can't. And everyone will say, oh, but what proof do we have that Ali Curtis can add two pieces? Well, what proof do you have that they don't? It's for one damn window, and he came in with Andy, got handcuffs on. Anyway, moving on.
No, you're right. All right, let's continue. San Jose 4, Chicago 1. I should have said Wondolowski 4 and Chicago 1. But San Jose with a big win and Wondolowski with the record. And the Quakes doing a lot better than the beginning of the season. Philly 0, Seattle 0, scoreless draw in Chester. Minnesota United 1, Columbus 0. Big win for Minnesota at home versus the Crew. The Crew is not performing up to standards over the last few weeks. We'll see if Caleb Porter and Tim Bezpachenko can put their ducks in a row and get a better result to maintain their high position in the Eastern Conference standings. Sporting Kansas City 1, Vancouver 1. Big, big point on the road for Vancouver, Dwayne, and big goal by a Canadian, by a Quebecer. Derek Cornelius scored a volley to tie the game and get a point on the road for the Whitecaps.
Montes Santos has this team playing a very dull, monotonous game, but getting some results now as opposed to playing a boring, monotonous game and not getting results. So we are starting to see how good of a coach Mark DeSantis is. He can take a pile of garbage and find a way to recycle it to take out those two little nuggets of gold that are on the bottom of the pop can that you didn't notice or what have you. So I think there's some good signs for the Whitecaps moving forward, but it's still the talent gap is massive, and that's to say nothing with the other issues around the club.
Exactly. Houston 2, DC United 1. Houston, Dwayne, I have to say, we don't talk about Houston a lot this year, but they're having good results. They're always in contention for games. They're always there to battle for the win. And they beat good team, and they're a tough team to beat at home, and it's going to get really warm in Houston, like, soon. It's going to stay warm for a while. Their home field advantage, especially with the climate, is quite a big advantage. And Houston will be a playoff team this year easily. They can even be dangerous in the playoffs. Orlando 5, FC Cincinnati. Dwayne, I forgot to ask you, what time is it? Oh, yeah, it's 5 past the keeper.
There you go. Yeah, a lot of lopsided scores this week. There's been a lot of lopsided scores in MLS this week, this year period, which is an odd phenomenon. I'm not too sure what that's about.
Yep. All right, last games this weekend. The Red Bulls, Atlanta 1-0. Red Bulls, FC Dallas, LAFC 1-1 for their second game in 4 days between the two. And Galaxy 0, the Colorado Rapids won a game. Woo-hoo! Yeah, first win of the season for Colorado. A 1-0 win on the road versus the Galaxy, Dwayne. It's about time.
It is. 5 points. You know, it's still going to be a struggle for this team. But nonetheless, when you've been, like I've seen it firsthand many times before, when you see it, have a team that is in that big of a spiral, like anything is positive. And I know from a fan perspective that how like relieving it is to have those wins. They're almost in some ways like more exciting than you know, just random wins on good teams, right? Like they mean as much to you almost as a playoff win for a good team. So enjoy your day week, Colorado fans. I don't think you're going to get a lot more. It's good for you.
And we said it when Yoan Demme won his game last week. the youngest coach in MLS history. Congratulations to Connor Casey, his first win as a manager in Major League Soccer with the Colorado Rapids. And before we say goodbye for today, tomorrow, obviously, we're having another show. We'll talk a little bit about the Canadian Premier League. We'll give the Player of the Week and the Young Player of the Week of the Canadian Premier League tomorrow, as it is now the new tradition on Soccer Today and on the North American Soccer Reporters. But a team won three trophies domestically in England. For a men's team, for the first time. It has been done before, like Pep mentioned, by the women of City. But it is the first English...
Arsenal.
Oh, sorry, I misunderstood that. Yeah. So Arsenal, the women's team, won the treble domestically, but it has never been done before with the men's team. They won the League Cup earlier this year, the Capital One Cup. Oh, no, is it the Carabao Cup now? Sorry, it changed so... Carling Cup, Capital One, Carabao,
oh,
I guess... It has to start with a C.
You're never wrong when you call it the League Cup.
It has to start with a C, though. So is it going to be called the Canadian Tire Cup one day? Will Canadian Tire be big enough? But the League Cup, then they won the league, famously, a week ago. And this weekend, they got the FA Cup. It's a domestic treble for Manchester City.
And they got it with an exclamation point with 6-0 win.
And a victory. Obviously, well, six, yeah.
Yeah, and Vincent Kompany, the main talking point of the City right now is that Vincent Kompany, the longtime captain, has although like he's going to go be a player manager there, moving on after more than a decade at City.
His last touch of the ball. Was his last touch of the ball the header that got the win? Because if it was, and imagine that's the last moment he played for, I think it's not because he played FA Cup, but yeah, that's like what a... What an exclamation point, like you mentioned. He jumped that. It's a perfect way to describe how he played for City, too, right? The type of goal. It was like a micro. That goal in itself and the lead up to it and his jump and his height and the way he hits the ball. It's a microcosm of his time with City, I think. And it was beautiful to see for a non-City fan like I am. So I can only imagine for you.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that unless you're the most bitter partisan out there, most fans of other teams can appreciate Vincent Kompany for his loyalty and just sort of his good naturedness. He never, even though he was a kind of reckless player at times and he had his share of red cards over his career, he never seemed malicious about it. So there was always that.
It's not like he's doing a two cleat slide tackle, then he gets up and looks at the guy and yells at him. Like he's not intimidating like others we've seen, but yeah.
Yeah, look, I mean, look, he's all-time, like that goal, he would have known, he was leaving when he scored that goal, the laser against Newcastle, which in many ways, many of us think is the actual moment City clinched the title this year. That is remarkable. And when you see his reaction, you kind of know that it's more special even. He scored the winning goal to win the 2014 title as well. Against West Ham, a lot of people forget that. Scored an amazing headed goal against Manchester United in the game in the FA Cup semifinal in 2011 that propelled them over. Or sorry, that was in the 2012 in the title run in Derby to win that, and that was also a massive moment, a very symbolic moment for the club to finally cast off their rivals. And just a legend across the board. And he loved Manchester City through and through. I suspect that when he is done playing, he will still maintain a role there.
Yeah, and he'll be cheering on City on social media for sure. But Manchester City, treble in the Football Association in England for the first time ever by a men's team. Congratulations to Pep Guardiola and Man City. You know what I thought was hilarious? You just won a treble. You just won the three biggest trophies in England. And you're celebrating, you're into confetti, and then the camera points to Pep Guardiola talking to Raheem Sterling about tactics and be like, okay, we won 6-0, but next time we're in the same situation, and he's like pointing on his hand like I'm doing on the TV right now, showing him how to do his runs the next time. You just won 6-0. Like, put the cell phone down. Stop looking at the tactics. It's okay to celebrate it, but I think it gives you an idea, like a window into the mindset of Pep Guardiola. The game's never over. He only thinks about soccer. In his mind, he only sees people running around with a football and how to make this running around with the football more efficient, how to break down defenses. And he was giving Sterling like a talking down to, like Stern talking down to while celebrating the treble. I thought that was maybe an explanation why Pep Guardiola is such a good coach, because work ethic can't really. When you're not celebrating and instead you're giving directions to your players when the season's over, yeah, that's called work ethic for you.
I might be insane too, but nonetheless.
Genius and insanity, like being a genius and being clinically insane, sometimes it's a very fine line. Here's your Carl Robinson line of the day. Fine lines between the two.
Yeah, welcome. Domestic treble, as you say, first time it's ever been done. Of course, for Manchester City, many will still call the season. I don't think it's possible to call domestic treble season a disappointment, but they won't. There will be many people that will insist that it is not a fully successful season because there was not a quad there, that they did not win all four. That will be, of course, the goal of this club moving forward. It will be hard to avoid those questions next year. We'll obviously review the season. We have to see what kind of moves are made in the summer. But I suspect right now, Pep, if he's not looking at what the transfer market might look like, he's at the very least looking at film of that Spurs first leg to figure out how he might be able to approach the Champions League a little bit better next year at the later stages, because that is really the last mountain that this club has to climb at this point. And, of course, Spurs and Liverpool still have a chance to climb it, and it will be somewhat – I don't know how, as a city, like put my city fan hat on for a second, I don't know how to think about Spurs winning that game, because that will be, it's so weird that a club that this was never in the conversation for will do it before the super club that I follow each week out. But, you know, that's it. I'll still probably be cheering for them on the day because.
Well, you know, it's Liverpool.
Diehard.
Yeah. Tottenham usually don't win things. They get close, but they usually don't win things. So, when is it? Is it June 1st, the final?
June 1st.
So June 1st, you'll get Spurs versus Liverpool. And we'll see what happens. But on that note, you can always follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Larme, and this show at Soccer Today SPN. Thank you for your time and for your support financially. We do appreciate every single dollar that is given to us to make sure that we can technically continue to grow, get equipment, pay for bandwidth, for internet access, for all the basic subscription needed to be able to produce a HD podcast daily. So we do thank you a lot for your contributions, and you can continue to contribute and get access to our exclusive Canadian Premier League coverage at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. We'll be back tomorrow with the CanPL Player of the Week and the CanPL Young Player of the Week announced on this very show. But until then, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Larame, and have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.